This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba is here again to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you'd like to talk with Zorba, this is the number to call, 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, what are our topics to sprinkle in with the calls this time?
Yes, we're going to talk about the sense of touch, its importance in communication throughout the ages. We know with children it's important. What about other adults? What does it say when you touch somebody?
Touchy-feely edition.
Touchy-feely edition. And diabetes. We're going to talk about some sort of disconcerting results on what might protect diabetics from having heart attacks, but we're going to put that into perspective.
Mm-hmm. And our recipe?
Blueberry bran cakes. They're not just for breakfast anymore. You can have them for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. But seriously, it's a new way to make your pancakes healthier.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. Don't forget our medical myth buster coming up later in the hour. Our number again is 800-462-7413. And before we take our first call, a doctor's tip for you.
Absolutely. You know, there's something that's very interesting that I think is very important for us to consider. It's a concept called ICE, I-C-E, in case of emergency. Most of us have cell phones on us, and what happens if we get stuck in an automobile accident or we end up in the hospital? Who do we call? And the concept is that we should put a name of somebody in our cell phone who we call. Well, cell phones have hundreds and hundreds of names in some cases. So what you should do is you should enter the name ICE, which stands for in case of an emergency, into the cell phone and put the name of the person who should be contacted in case you have an emergency. And what you can do is, in addition to putting the word ICE in there, you can do a backup and name that person in case of emergency so that anyone who may help you in case of emergency knows who to call. This is a great concept. It's called the ICE concept. It was spearheaded by a paramedic. The concept is catching on in America, and you should do it too. ICE in your phone today to keep you safe.
ICE. Sounds interesting. 800-462-7413. To the phones we go, Zorba, and a listener now in Buffalo, New York. Hello.
Hello.
How can we help?
Oh, thank you. Yes. I'd appreciate Dr. Pastor's third-party opinion on what I'm going to tell you. My wife advised me to go to see an MD who's also a naturopath. And this person put me into a lot of major workup testing, which cost about $240. Insurance didn't cover it. And the determination from that testing was that I had low serotonin levels, which he said might affect my exhaustion attacks. And so I thought, great, I know what's going on within me. Then I was having supper with some friends, one of whom is a retired neurosurgeon. And I said, hey, listen, I've been diagnosed with low serotonin levels. And he gave me a funny look and said, I didn't know you could diagnose those things. So I'm a bit of a conservative in medical things. I like things that are FDA approved and clinically tested and all of that. And some of the medicine, one's called Adrasset that she's said I should go on, and otherwise a rather expensive health food, medical food.
Uh-huh. And question, when you say rather expensive, what's rather expensive for the health food? I'm just curious about that.
Yeah.
What's the cost?
Well, the medical food is about $15-$20 a jar.
So $15-$20, and how many jars do you go? How often do you go through a jar?
Well, I haven't started them yet, but I think a jar lasts about 2 weeks or something.
Uh-huh. So if we look at the whole cost, it'll cost you about $750 to $1,000 a year,
because
there'll be the other testing for somebody who feels perfectly fine and something that, of course, is not approved by the FDA. So if you look at naturopaths, which, by the way, are not MDs. Now, this may be an MD, medical doctor who went to medical school and then studied naturopathy. I mean, that may be the case of what it is. They do a variety of tests that that haven't shown scientifically to be worthwhile. In other words, what you have to do is say, okay, I measure the serotonin level in person X, and when I improve it, they improve because they're depressed, for instance. Mm-hmm. Well, some of this is pseudoscience. For instance, we know that SSRI, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, which are antidepressants like Prozac, increase serotonin levels. So serotonin levels became a buzzword. So you have a whole industry around serotonin levels. One part of the industry is Eli Lilly. They made Prozac that worked very well. The other part of the industry is the naturopathy industry and say, well, we have a natural way of increasing serotonin levels. Therefore, that'll help your depression. And the reality is one is science, one is not science. There's a choice involved. There's nothing wrong with naturopathy. It works for many people because, in my mind, the way it works is it increases the body's ability to actually feel better.
Okay.
But when it starts costing you $1,000 a year to take a supplement to feel better, that's when I kind of step in.
Especially if you're feeling fine in the first place.
Right. And if you're looking for something that's FDA approved, forget it. There's nothing that's FDA approved that you're actually getting. So, it's not going to be covered by your insurance because it's not covered by your insurance.
Yeah, right.
So my recommendation is this. If you're feeling good, continue doing what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
However, you have to be able to assuage the wife, because she's the one who told you to see her.
My wife's away at the moment, so I'll catch up with her when she gets back.
I mean, that's the issue. So how are you going to get points in your marriage? What are you going to do?
Oh, well, I'll speak to her gently and lovingly when she gets back about it.
That's the way to do it.
Oh, well, thanks so much. I really appreciate your advice. That gives me a lot of confidence when I go back and say enough.
Great. Yeah. We really appreciate the call. Thanks a lot. 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, a listener in Gays Mills, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi there, Dr. Zorba and Tom. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
First of all, I want to mention to Dr. Zorba, several years ago you came to the Gays Mills community when we hosted the Wisconsin State Apple Recipe Contest, and you so graciously were a judge for us. I was a fan of your program prior and have been ever since. So when we came up with this problem that we're dealing with, you were the first one that I thought we should give a call.
Well, thank you. And just for the listeners' information,
right.
Zorba's
right.
happy to that's be right. a judge wherever you are for whatever it is you want judged.
As long as there's food involved. That's what it is. As long as there's food involved.
He was a great judge. Yes, he was.
See, Tom, I got points.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was there with my daughter, Vanessa. We loved it.
Fabulous. That was several years ago because she was pretty small at that time.
That's right. That's right. It was.
Well, Dr. Zorba, we have kind of a magnesium mystery going on, and I'd like to ask your expertise and opinion. My mom is 82 years old and is in pretty good health. She takes medication in pill form for diabetes and tachycardia, and both are controlled nicely. The problem we have is her magnesium level is running quite low. It's currently at 1.2 and has been as high as 1.5. Her medicine has been changed to a slow-release magnesium 2 times a day, and she's also on magnesium oxide. She was on a potassium magnesium water pill that caused her potassium to go sky high and left the magnesium level the same. Both her healthcare provider and her endocrinologist are stumped on this one. She eats okay, not perfect, but okay. But I guess my question is could it be normal for a magnesium level to have been that low all of her life?
Yes. The first answer is yes. And the reason is, first of all, we don't test for magnesium levels that often. Usually we test for magnesium levels in certain specific situations that are when patients are on multiple medications and they have multiple medical problems, such as diabetes, hypertension, heart disease, and so on. Then we test for magnesium levels. And some people have naturally low levels of magnesium levels. And I'll give you the perfect example. It has to do with temperature. 98.6 is, of course, heralded as a normal temperature. Well, for some people, it's not. That's not their normal. It's 98.2. And for other people, it's 98.8. There's a variation of normality. And when we go to the extreme, some people will naturally do fine with lower red blood counts, lower white blood counts, lower potassium, and lower magnesium. So she may have had this this their whole life. Now, the issue really comes from the endocrinologist. That's the bottom line issue. And my recommendation in situations like this is you need a second opinion. In other words, why are we dealing with the magnesium? Is it really important based on the medications that she's on? Is this a naturally low magnesium level that we're simply chasing? But that's mom, and she's how old? 82, and she feels healthier. And why do we chase this? Now, the other issue is she's taking magnesium and she feels stronger. Should she stay on the magnesium? Should we forget the level and should she stay in it? You need a second opinion from a different endocrinologist. That's okay. The bottom line. I would not chase the number because the number may not correspond to what she actually needs. And my recommendation always, when you're going to get a second opinion, you get it at least 50 to 100 miles away from where you are. And the reason is you want to get it with a group that does not know this endocrinologist, because sometimes people are respectful of the other doctor and they don't give their full opinion because they're sort of colored by the fact that they don't want to insult the other person. So you need to go in some direction away from this endocrinologist and say, are we really chasing something? My guess, and once again, that's my opinion, is probably most likely she's had a low level her whole life. And magnesium may make her feel better, but I think you may just be chasing things. So get a second opinion and continue to eat apples.
Yes, I tell her that every day.
you guys have the best apples. I finally remember that. It was wonderful. It was during the apple picking season in the fall, and the day was just perfect, and the apple pie was scrumptious.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for taking my call.
Thank you so much for that call. Did you touch and feel while you were in Gay's Mills? Because we have some psychologist research on touching.
Well, you know, it's very interesting because when we look at the sense of touch, it's the first thing that we do when our moms touch us and our dads touch us when we're born. And we get a lot through touch. And babies who are not touched have big problems when they become adults. I mean, there's a lot of research that's gone back now 50 years showing that the sense of touch is critical in development. And the question is, especially in our society, where does physical touch feel? Now, if you go to Latino societies, especially in South America, touch is very common. You hug people, you kiss them on both cheeks. Yeah. In American society, not as common. And I still remember when men, especially grown men, would never hug each other. And if you look at it, the Russians back in the Cold War, the Russians would hug each other when we see them, and the Americans would shake, would give handshakes. Mm-hmm. And that has been a society change that has occurred in the last 30 years. You're shaking your head. You remember that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So what's this research?
Well, this research shows that touch makes a difference. So there are a number of emotions that are really communicated by touch. It really has a whole vocabulary, which can be anger, it can be resentment, it can be joy, it can be happiness. And the issue is, where does this play a role in our society and in stress? You know, because quite often, if we're in a stressful environment, if we are depressed, if we're unhappy, if we don't have people around us who love us, we may go days and days and never be touched.
Yeah.
And what does that then do to the stress in our lives, and how do we then withdraw from that? So, you know, as you said, touchy-feely, where does this fit in? I think when it's the proper time to touch someone, you should touch them. And we're obviously talking about appropriate touch.
Not only really inappropriate, but touching can really have negative effects.
Oh, there's
there
no
are
doubt,
times
of course.
When it's sort of inappropriate for or you don't like it when somebody.
Well, that's
you.
where the communication issue can sometimes be very difficult. Among people who know each other, often touch is certainly acceptable. And people who don't know each other, touch is not acceptable. Mm-hmm. But if we look at our society and how we've looked at touch, as I said, over a 30-year period, it's really changed a lot where we touch each other more. And I was mentioning this. I was down in Florida, and I was lecturing in Jacksonville, Florida, one of my favorite places to go to. And I was talking to a historian, and it wasn't about touch, but it was about the effects of culture in our society. And he said, the effect of the Spanish culture in our society in the last 30 years is remarkable. So maybe the reason that we hug each other and touch each other more in America today is because of the effect of the Latino tradition on our sort of a European-American culture, which was the dominant culture in America today.
My wife and I were in France a few years ago and met up with some friends of friends who were American in Paris and met them at the door, and they went to do the kiss on the two. I was totally flummoxed. I almost put my hands out to keep them from coming and didn't do it. I just said, we're not into, I mean, I'm not into, it was very, very, very disconcerting. I mean, I know the tradition, but I never have participated.
Yes, until you participate, in which case it just is, there's a closeness involved, but you're right. It has to be on both ends.
Yeah.
It's got to be touch me, it's acceptable. And that's where this nonverbal stuff really counts in our lives.
800-462-7413. Question for Zorba? That's the number to call. Callers are waiting, but we have a line open for you at 1-800-462-7413. Here's a listener now, Zorba, in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Hello.
Hi, Zorba. How are you today?
Good, good.
How can we help?
Well, I have had an ear infection for about 2 weeks now. I've been treated by a doctor. Went to the emergency room the first day. It was done because of the pressure that was happening in the ear. I'm unable to actually hear out of the ear for 2 weeks now. The first medication they put me on was just plain old amoxicillin. Then I went to the doctor about 6 days later after it still wasn't clearing up. And they then upped the antibiotic to amoxicillin with Tassin. And that's been going now for about 7 days. I've been taking that medication, and it still hasn't cleared up. So it's kind of getting to the point where I'm getting a little bit upset because the ear, I can't hear out of the ear. And they have, both times I went in, they said there's no damage to the ear. However, I'm trying to find out if there's some kind of way to actually unplug the ear.
Sure. A couple things about ear infections. First of all, we know that when we tap the ear, if we go into the ear with a needle and remove the fluid, which, by the way, was the standard treatment back in the 50s because we didn't have antibiotics. You take that fluid out of the ear. It sounds like it would be painful, but actually it relieves the pain of the swollen eardrum if it's swollen. We know that about 85% of these are viral. And in fact, in Europe, in Holland, in Denmark, in Sweden, all of Scandinavia, in England and France, they don't treat ear infections with antibiotics. They say, wait 2 days. If it doesn't get better, if you have a fever 103, 104, then we'll treat it because most of these are viral. So the reason why the antibiotic isn't working is it's probably unnecessary. Mm. That's the reason.
But this in is other words, 2 weeks.
It's viral. Well, sometimes what happens is the ear infection lasts a long time. But the other, I mean, viruses, you've had a virus, sometimes it lasts for a couple of weeks. I mean, you know, with and without treatment, it lasts for a while. But the issue is, like you said, if you don't have a high fever, it's not the infection. It's what's this popping in the air. Well, over-the-counter Sudafed, available without a prescription behind the counter, at the pharmacy, often opens up the eustachian tube. That's the tube between the nose and your ear. If you hold your nose and you pop your ear, that's the tube that often is the important tube. And that can be swollen, and that can produce this popping sound or this full sound in the ear. So I'd recommend going to take Sudafed. That's number one. Sudafed can be very useful. Moisturize the air, very, very useful, which can be good. You know, if you blow your ears periodically throughout the day, that may help you symptomatically. This is all symptomatic relief. And this usually gets better with time, but sometimes it takes a month to get better. Some people it even takes longer. But Sudafed is what you need because it's going to give you some symptomatic relief if you can tolerate it. I wouldn't go to another antibiotic. Chances of you having any bacterial infection at this point are pretty close to zero.
Okay. And the other main thing I'm concerned about is loss of hearing, because I hear that in adults, if you have an ear infection for any length of time, that is there going to be a chance of loss of hearing in that ear?
Probably not. Probably not. Adults are not any more prone to a loss of hearing from an ear infection than children are. Loss of hearing from adults generally comes from loud noise. I mean, most loss of hearing is loud noise, rock concerts, factories. You go to a lot of rock concerts, and do you work in a factory?
Neither one.
I think you'll be okay. So thanks so much for your call.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. Zorba, before the break, time to give your tongue and your reflexes a workout because we have another edition of Rapid Fire. Ready?
I am ready.
Let's go. Our first listener, Robert, texted from his smartphone, "I had severe migraines for many years and found a cure literally by accident. I had a motorcycle accident, hit my helmeted head on the road, and now have not had a migraine in 26 years. Could there be a connection?
Absolutely, but I do not recommend that people get into motorcycle accidents to get rid of their migraine. There are better treatments out there.
I ride a cycle, and I was thinking of dumping it just to see if I could feel a little bit better. From bikes to tattoos, Zorba, we have a concerned parent whose daughter wants to fade or remove a colored tattoo on her shoulder. Do any of these products, like Tat Be Gone, actually work?
Absolutely not. They don't work at all. However, if you go to a dermatologist with a laser that can remove tattoos, that works. There's only one side effect. It's lack of money because it's very expensive.
Moving on, Lawrence in Madison, Wisconsin, who's prone to cold sores, asks, almonds are a great food for you, but they cause cold sores. Can I eat almonds and take lysine, or should I just forget about eating almonds?
I eat almonds all the time, and I haven't had a cold sore in 20 years. So chew away in those almonds. I don't think it's going to have any effect at all. And the lysine, if it works, stick to it.
Next up is Paul from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, who writes, have lots of skin tags under my arms and other damp places, and insurance won't pay to remove them. Can I safely razor them off, or is there a chemical or freeze solution I can use?
Ouch, ouch, ouch. Yes, you can razor them off, but remember, after you razor them off, make sure that you put little betadine or something on top of it so they don't get infected. You will cause no harm, and believe me, your pits will look more beautiful.
Finally, Janet from Oak Creek, Wisconsin, shares this bit of wisdom to you, Zorba. On your show, you mentioned that when you wear earplugs on a plane, the person next to you looks at you funny. I remember a saying our company clerk had on her desk. At 20, you worry about what people think about you. At 40, you don't care what people think about you. And at 60, you realize people weren't thinking about you at all. So don't sweat the co-passenger's opinion. We're out of time for this edition of Rapid Fire, but make sure to get your question in for our next round. Just send your email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
You're going to love our recipe. It's coming up next. Lots more for you. More of your calls, of course. Some more interesting research to talk over. And, of course, our medical myth buster. All right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number again, 1-800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. But as always about this time in the hour, before our next call, a yummy recipe, Zorba.
Yes, blueberry bran cakes.
Blueberry bran cakes.
So when you think of pancakes, what's the thing that comes to your mind, Tom?
What do you mean, what's the thing?
What comes to your mind with when you have pancakes?
That's pancakes and syrup. They taste good.
That's right. The syrup, pancakes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I mean, think about it.
Well, you can't have a pancake without syrup.
No, not at all. And when you think about it, it's not really a very healthy food, is it, right?
Oh, it's not healthy at all.
It's basically eating candy in the morning.
It tastes good.
It wasn't made for health. It was made for taste.
Right.
You know, so it's like pancakes on Sunday. I think called pancakes today. On the other hand, how can we make pancakes healthier? Now, or can we make pancakes healthier? And the answer is yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But then they don't taste good anymore.
Well, it all depends on your taste. They won't taste exactly the same. But if you could make them taste really good, then you might try them, right?
Like, for example, bran.
Blueberry bran cakes. Yeah. Now, what's bran good for? Well, we know that bran is good for digestion.
Yes.
We know that bran is good for our colon.
Yes.
We know that bran is very helpful because it has fiber.
Right.
So anytime we can add fiber, be it in whole grain toast, be it in bran and cereal, it's better. We're going to make a better pancake. This, ladies and gentlemen, is a better pancake.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Let's do it.
Okay. 1 cup of bran flakes.
A cup of bran flakes.
And you know where you get that?
At the grocery store.
In the cereal section. One cup of bran.
Right.
1 egg.
An egg.
That's right. 1 1/4 cups of milk.
1 1/4 cups milk.
That's right. And always use 2% or 1% milk.
Yeah.
I myself cannot drink skim milk. I don't like the taste of it.
Yeah.
I have to have a little bit of fat in the milk and 1 or 2%.
I don't like skim, and I do drink 1%.
1% milk, which is good. 2 tablespoonfuls of vegetable oil.
2 big tea vegetable oil.
So you want a neutral oil in this. You obviously do not want olive oil. You want a neutral oil.
Yeah.
Canola oil will be fine. Or a regular vegetable oil, which is a blend, which is usually soybean and cottonseed oil, are also good.
Mm-hmm.
1 cup of all-purpose flour.
A cup of all-purpose flour.
That's right. 1 tablespoonful of sugar.
Big tea sugar.
A teaspoon of baking powder.
Little tea baking powder.
1/2 teaspoon of baking soda.
1/2 little tea baking soda.
1/2 teaspoon of salt.
1/2 little tea salt.
By the way, if you look at that, that's actually what's you know, in the prepaid pancake boxes.
Yeah, yeah.
These are the things that
bran flakes.
Except for the, right, obviously. Yeah. And 1/2 cup of blueberries. If they're fresh, that's great. Of course, you know, fresh blueberries are wonderful. And if they're frozen, that would be okay, too.
Yeah, 1/2 cup of blueberries.
That's right. Okay, let's make it.
Okay.
So crush up the cereal. How are you going to do that?
With a hammer?
Probably with a hammer. Gosh, you would just destroy the whole kitchen. You could do it with a mortar or a pestle. You could do it with a rolling pin.
Okay.
I don't think I would do it with a hammer.
Okay.
I'd probably hit my hand. Crush up the cereal. You know, it's very clear. After all these years, I don't think you spend much time in the kitchen. I'm shocked.
Very, very insightful.
In a bowl, beat the egg.
Yeah.
Beat the egg. You know how you beat an egg.
I do. I know what an egg beater is.
You know what an egg beater is.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't beat it like take your hands
no,
and
no,
beat
right.
It.
You use an egg beater, right.
Beat the egg and then stir in the milk, oil, and cereal. Let the mixture stand until the cereal has softened. That's very important. About 5 minutes, you want the bran to be able to soak up the moisture.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like you do when you have cereal in the morning.
Right.
Stir in the remaining dry ingredients and whisk until blended.
Mm-hmm.
If the batter is a little bit too thick, you know what pancake batter looks like if you've ever made pancakes,
mm-hmm.
and most of us
mm-hmm.
have, then you can add a little bit of additional milk. But you want to whisk it until it's blended. And by the way, the reason that it may be thicker in some cases has to do with how much surface area you have on the bran based on how much you crushed it.
Mm-hmm.
But you may add a little bit of milk if necessary. Then, when you're all done, stir in the blueberries. Now, heat a nonstick griddle or skillet. Very important. And you may want to grease it if necessary, but I would spray on Pam because the idea is to make this lower fat.
Mm-hmm.
Pancakes are usually a high-fat item.
Mm-hmm.
Pour about 1/4 cup of the batter per pancake on the griddle. Flip it when the bubbles appear and cook until golden brown and enjoy it.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, you'd still pour a bunch of unhealthy syrup on
it. Well, I have a question for you. When you use the syrup, do you pour it on the pancake or do you put it on the side?
Well, I put it on the pancakes.
If you put it on the side, you will often have about 1/2 as much syrup.
Yeah, but it won't taste as good.
If it's on the surface of your tongue, when you bite into the pancake, that's where you experience sweet.
Yeah.
You don't need it in the center of the
pancake.
Sometimes
you pour it on the pancake and it kind of soaks in.
Absolutely, and you get more calories.
Yeah, and it doesn't – you think you don't have enough syrup, so you pour more syrup.
Absolutely, and it's
because – But put it on the side, you're saying.
Put it on the side and dip it just like you do with salad, and you have the dressing on the side. Take a little bowl, or a little cup or something else, put the syrup on the side, and then dip the pancake in. It'll be on the surface of the pancake, and you will often cut the syrup in half, and that's where extra calories come. Anytime we can cut down on calories in America, we have been successful.
That's very interesting,
I think.
Okay, I imagine if our listeners would like this recipe, there's a way of finding
it. Absolutely. You know something? We have a newfangled invention
called
the World Wide Web. And we have a computer, and many of us have Wi-Fi. So if you go to ZorbaPastor.org, you can search for this recipe and all of the other fine recipes we have on our show. And not only that, but you can sign up for our weekly podcast. That's ZorbaPastor.org.
Our toll-free number, 1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Trenton, New Jersey. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. How can we help?
Okay, I have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
My mouth constantly burns. It's usually my tongue. It burns like hot peppers.
Hmm.
The only time it doesn't burn is if I'm eating. If I eat, it doesn't burn.
Huh. Has this been going on for a long time?
Yes, it's been going on for about 2 years.
Wow. Have you had any medical help with this?
I've been to a few doctors. I've been to the University of Pennsylvania, where they have a test center, a smell and test center. They did not help me. I went to, like I said, many doctors. They said maybe it could be nerves, it could be other things, but no one has helped me.
So nobody's been able to give you an answer for this.
Right.
Now, have you tried to sort of repopulate the lactobacillus in your mouth with lactobacillus capsules or yogurt?
No. The only thing they did tell me at one time, they said maybe my mouth was dry.
Mouth was dry. Okay.
Yeah, and okay. I took medication for that,
mm-hmm.
and that did not help.
That did not help. And are you on any medicines at all right now, by the way?
Yes, I take cholesterol medication.
Mm-hmm.
I take high blood pressure medication.
Uh-huh.
And I take a Pavlex for my blood thinner.
Mm-hmm.
I do take that.
Okay. Now, have you, Plavix is a drug that we give, you know, when people have heart disease. Did you stop your cholesterol medicines at all?
No, I did not.
To see if that weather is a factor. Okay, I've got a couple ideas. First of all, some of this can be related to the drugs you're taking, but you're on cholesterol drugs, blood pressure drugs, and Plavix, which means you've got heart disease drugs. You don't want to stop those unless you have to. I've got a couple of ideas. First of all, I would recommend that you have yogurt. Yogurt, which has, which is a natural yogurt that has live yeast. It's got to say live yeast. There are a whole bunch of different yogurts on the market. Danone is a good one. Activa is another one. More expensive, and try to repopulate your mouth with lactobacillus. There also are probiotics that you can get at a natural food store that have lactobacillus, and this may be partially due to a lack of lactobacillus, our bacteria that populate our mouth and our GI tract that can be good. In other words, they're good bacteria. They're not bad bacteria. So first thing I would do is try that to see if that's it. If that fails, I'd ask your dentist for a mouthwash or your doctor, a prescription mouthwash called Paradex, P-E-R-I-D-E-X, Paradex. Now, Paradex is very interesting in that people who have chronic halitosis, bad breath, can often be helped with Paradex. And what it does is it sanitizes the mouth. It does the opposite from yogurt. It takes the bacteria in the mouth and decreases the bacterial count in the mouth. You have to pay attention. After you use the mouthwash, you have to brush your teeth because it can discolor the teeth. So use the mouthwash twice a day and use a whitening toothpaste to color that. That would be the second thing I would use. The next thing I would use is, what sort of toothpaste do you use right now?
Colgate or Aquafresh.
I would get rid of that and I would go to Sensodyne. And if that doesn't work, I would use a baking soda, not baking powder because that would bubble,
mm-hmm.
but baking soda because this may be a toothpaste issue and it may be a fluoride issue. Fluoride has lots and lots of problems for some people, and I'd get rid of the fluoride in my diet, and the way to do it is through toothpaste. That's basically how we get it. So those are the tricks of the trade of what I would try and see if this works, and make sure you call us back and let us know.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate the call. That was good, interesting stuff, Sarma.
Yeah. Well, sometimes, you know, it pays to be a doctor sometimes. And actually come up with some of these tricks. Some come from me and some come from old Dr. Kellogg, who, by the way, is 92 years of age now. 92 years of age, still goes to medical conferences to learn about medicine, even though he doesn't practice. He's 92. The brain is still working for him.
Whoa. 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, let's bounce over to the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox now and take this quick question from Becca in Milford, Pennsylvania. Becca writes, "My back hurts and is very stiff when I wake up in the morning. Some nights, the stiffness wakes me up early in the morning. I bought a new mattress and have tried sleeping in different positions. My husband is beginning to think I'm nuts because every morning when he wakes up, I'm laying beside him in a child's pose trying to stretch out. I'm 32, 145 pounds, and go to the gym 3 days a week. Help."
Well, Quite often, even though you go to the gym 3 days a week, you may not be doing the right things. And the reality is stretching exercises on a regular basis can make a difference for all types of musculoskeletal pain. And sometimes you need an evaluation by someone who is a professional, who knows what they're doing, who can measure the range of motion of all your joints and make a decision as to what you're doing right and what you're doing wrong. My recommendation is one visit to a physical therapist may make all the difference in what you're doing and what you should do. And perfect example is me. I used to have back pain every single morning when I got up. Now I do some stretching exercises. It took a while to find the right ones. Very simple in the evening before I go to sleep, in the morning when I wake up, and that has helped me. You need an evaluation by a PT, physical therapist, to answer your question.
Or a chiropractor?
Chiropractor might also be able to give you some excellent, excellent recommendations. The whole idea is to put you in charge and make sure that you can do this on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. Don't let your lifestyle problems stiffen you up. Let us help. Just send your questions to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Some more interesting research coming up. More of your calls, of course, our medical myth buster. Right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number again is 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, some interesting, I think maybe important information on diabetes heart treatments?
Yes, yes. It's actually discouraging treatment, discouraging information about present treatments that are going on. And let's talk a little bit about it. Diabetes, big problem in America. Roughly 9%, 10% of the population has diabetes. But if we look, for instance, at heart attack patients, one quarter of all heart attack patients are diabetics.
So diabetes can lead to heart attack.
And that is the main thing. It's heart attacks, kidney disease, stroke, and so on. So for many years, and this is still the dominant theory, despite these particular studies, was that if we control the diabetes and cholesterol and so on, we'll do better. So 2 years ago, a study came out. The study showed that if we took patients and we gave them intensive control of their diabetes, really good, you know, just push that down, blood sugar down to normal, we expect there would be less heart attacks and strokes, and the study showed no.
Wow.
There was no difference at all. In fact, for people who were under really tight control, they had more heart attacks and stroke. And so we started realizing maybe the control is just too tight with that. Let's sort of treat diabetes, but don't treat it super tight. So then the question was, what about treating cholesterol, high blood pressure, and smoking, what effect will that have at it? So the national guidelines were get that cholesterol, the bad cholesterol, down below 100. Make sure you get the systolic blood pressure at 130 or lower. If you've had a previous heart attack, get that LDL or bad cholesterol down to 70 or 80. Get people to quit smoking. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, this long-term study, two studies that have come out, just presented at a recent meeting of the American College of Cardiology, show it doesn't make much of a difference.
So treating people with diabetes for blood pressure and cholesterol is useless?
Well, according to these studies, it doesn't seem to show much of a difference. Now, what's very important in medicine and what really confuses people is here you have one study that says you shouldn't do it and other studies that say that you should do it. These particular studies were very good studies, and what's discouraging is that we don't know what the right numbers are that we should shoot for. We know that the treatment of high blood pressure reduces heart attack and stroke. We know that beyond a shadow of a doubt. There's no doubt about it. The question is, are we treating it too low? In other words, is there a U-shaped curve where we get the blood pressure to a certain number, but when we get lower than that number, we cause problems? The same may be true of cholesterol. Is there a number, but when we get lower than that number, does it actually cause problems?
You mentioned smoking. Should diabetics not worry about it and keep on smoking?
No. Smoking is still an issue because it's an independent issue with a whole bunch of other diseases. What we're going to do and what's going to occur over the next year is this data is going to be analyzed, and we're going to find out what blood pressure we should shoot for, what cholesterol we should shoot for, and of course, no smoking is always the key. The answer will come.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. And Zorba, a listener, joins us now in Spokane, Washington. Hi.
Hi, guys. Hey, it's great to be on your show.
Good to have you. What's up?
Okay. I have a peculiar odor in the palms of my hands. When I wake up in the morning, both the palms of my hands would smell real metallic, like I've been gripping something metal all night, but I'm not. And then after about 3 or 4 months, the left hand quit having the odor, and now it's just the right hand.
Okay.
And it's just creepy. And it goes away within like an hour of waking up. It never smells during the day. If I wake up during the night, I've gotten the habit where I smell my hands, and they don't smell during the night. It's only when I wake up in the morning.
Hmm. Are you falling asleep with your hand on the bed frame?
No.
Falling asleep with your hand on the bed frame?
I curl up in a little ball, and my hands are under my pillows. They don't touch anything but my pillows at night.
Uh-huh. So it's only you. Are you sleeping with anyone?
No.
Well, okay. Why are you asking
that? I'm sorry.
That?
Well, I don't know. No. I didn't just mean a human. I meant like a cat or a dog. I mean, you might be seeing a cat or a dog.
You wouldn't have said someone.
I mean, I said with anyone. I mean, it could be any living animal. You know, you wake up in the morning, your hands smell, and, you know, you've got the St. Bernard in the bed with you. I mean, it's a slam dunk.
Yeah, if it was my dog, I would, yeah.
You know, that.
No, I'm in there all alone at night.
Yeah, but I mean, because that would be something. How long does it take for the smell to go away?
Between a half hour and an hour, and then it's just gone. Usually about an hour.
Do you sweat a lot?
No,
you don't sweat a lot. So, I mean, because sweating will actually do that. Before you go to sleep at night, what do? Do you wash your hands, brush your teeth? Tell me what your evening toilet is. Tom has an evening toilet. He has a ritualized way that he goes to sleep every night.
How would
every
you know
single
anything
night.
About going
That's
to
it. That's it. You have an evening toilet. That's right. I just know that about you, Tom.
Yeah.
So. Oh, that's funny. Well, I'm not a routine kind of gal, so I just sort of do whatever. But I'll just, I'm getting ready and, use the bathroom and wash my hands. And sometimes I brush my teeth and sometimes I don't. It depends how tired I am.
Okay.
And then I'll just, crawl off to bed.
Uh-huh. Because, I mean, sometimes there are things you're carrying with you from the evening. And if you wash your hands, you'll get rid of them. I have a recommendation. I would recommend hand sanitizer before you go to sleep every single night. Right, that's what I would do. And I would rub my hands for 15 to 20 seconds. And I would do it twice, not once. Because it's probably a bacteria that are on your hand that may be in the crevices in your hand. And that's probably what this is. Soap is good. Hand sanitizer is actually better for this. So get a hand sanitizer like Purell. Wipe it for 15 seconds and then repeat. Okay, you've done it twice. What you're going to do is dry out your hand with the alcohol and sanitize it with the alcohol and the other chemicals that are in the hand sanitizer and see if that does it. That's probably going to do it. You probably have some bacteria on your hand during the night, what they're doing, and I don't know why it's on one hand versus another. Believe me, I know a lot, but I have no idea why it's on one hand versus another. But hand sanitizer reduces bacterial count. That's probably what you're smelling. That's what you're smelling, so.
Okay.
That's what I would do. Wash the sheets, wash the pillowcases. I assume you do that once again.
Yeah.
Those are other sources of bacteria. If that fails, I would get the pillows dry cleaned. That's what I would do because it might be that there's something in the pillow that's actually just on the hand. You know, we tend to grab our pillows during the evening. We're there for 8 hours. The pillows, the sheets, the blankets, the pillowcases, just sanitize the whole bunch. Bring it into a dry cleaner for that has to be dry cleaned. But first, the hand sanitizer.
Would you think it would make a difference if there were feather pillows as opposed to, polyester pillows or anything?
Maybe the bacteria may stay in there. But, I mean, you just get them dry clean. Bring them to your local dry cleaner and do it. But do the hand sanitizer first. You want to know why? It's cheaper. And I'm cheap.
Yeah.
Good luck.
I understand that. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it because this has been a strange mystery.
Yeah. Thanks so much for the call.
Let us know what happens.
I will. Thank you.
And when you call, I promise Zorba won't ask who you're sleeping with.
I don't kiss and tell.
Thanks, guys. Thank you. 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, time once again for our medical myth buster. We have a listener myth today sent to us from the moniker Confused in Darlington, Wisconsin, about multivitamins. Confused writes, Reader's Digest has an article about the myths about vitamins. In it, they report evidence that multivitamins do no good and may cause harm. Except for pregnant women, they don't recommend anyone take them. The only vitamin they recommend is vitamin D, no others. I take vitamins feeling I am getting extra antioxidants and thus helping prevent some cancers. Am I truly wasting my money?
Well, the phrase has always been Americans have the most expensive urine in the world because of all the vitamins that we take. And whether or not you're wasting your money, well, we spend a lot of money on vitamins. And frankly, the data on vitamins has been worse and worse and worse over time. We know that if you take, for instance, beta carotene and you are a smoker, that you're more likely to get heart attacks. So beta carotene kind of, became the vitamin that we loved, and now it's the vitamin that we don't love. Vitamin D, which I think is great to take well, when the data comes out in 2 years, we may find that people taking vitamin D are not going to do that much better either. I've got a very simple recommendation, and I think the issue with vitamins is how do we keep it simple where we're not going to cause ourselves harm? And my recommendation is a multivitamin with minerals, period. No antioxidants in it. Get your antioxidants from food, because there's some evidence that maybe antioxidants don't work because we want the body to kill cancer cells. And if we reduce these antioxidants, they may not actually kill them. So my recommendation is a multivitamin with minerals, 1,000 to 2,000 units of vitamin D, and that's it. I think the other vitamins are questionable at this point. The other supplements are questionable at this point. People write in all the time, wait a minute, I read about this, I read about this, I read about that. The problem is it's a quagmire. It's a quagmire. So simple is the answer.
Given that, you sort of disagree with the Reader's Digest statement that multivitamins do no good and may cause harm.
You know, the issue with Reader's Digest is it's not quite the same as the New England Journal of Medicine. No, it's right up there. It's right up there, but Reader's Digest, it speaks for itself.
When's the last time you read the Reader's Digest?
In a doctor's office.
Of course. Along with all the other 1960s magazines.
Exactly. It.
Have a myth you'd like Zorba to bust? Just send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. And Zorba, a listener with us now in Sandpoint, Idaho. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
Yes, I was calling about night sweats that I get pretty occasionally. And I just wondered what they were caused by and if there's anything I should be worried about.
You get these every night or some nights?
I would say it's pretty rare. It's like every few months I might get them, sometimes a couple nights in a row, but usually just once in a great while.
And you can't peg them to any kind of behavior, whether you're drinking or not drinking or nervous or not, anything that you do that might cause them?
I can't seem to see any correlation with anything that I'm doing. The only thing I noticed was the last time that I noticed that I was getting them, I had been injured and I'd been taking some ibuprofen, and I wondered if that was my body's way of getting rid of that.
I kind of doubt it, but when you say night sweats, how sweaty are you? I mean, do you soak through things? Or?
Yeah, sometimes I just wake up and I'm just drenched.
Oh, you're just drenched. What have you done for it? You've had it for a long time. You've tried different things, I'm sure.
You know, I haven't really, it hasn't really bothered me that much.
Yeah.
Just something that I've often wondered about.
And live with. Blankets? Have a heavy blanket, light blanket?
You know, it seems like it's not so dependent on temperature. It's sometimes it'll happen when it's cool or warm.
Sure. Most people, by the way, with night sweats say it doesn't seem to make a difference when they have it. They say, well, if I put a sheet on the bed, it doesn't matter, or, you know, or there. And that's a different kind of a sweating. You know, I mean, that's when we're hot. I remember I grew up in Chicago and we didn't have air conditioning in our house, and it didn't matter what we put on the bed at night in the August, it was impossible to sleep. But night sweats are a little different. The other thing is, frankly, we have different cortisol levels in our body. We have cortisol levels that peak during the day. usually in the morning at about 10 or 11 in the morning, and then again at about 3 or 4 in the afternoon, there's a lower peak. And in the evening, it's usually at its lower level. And there's one theory that night sweats are due to these changes in cortisol levels. And so anything that might change our cortisol level to increase it or change it from the way it normally is can result in a night sweat. And so some people believe that night sweats are a variation of something that goes on during REM sleep. And just like you can have nightmares, which are often associated with sweating, people often say, I woke up from a nightmare and it was so, you know, I was so bothered I was sweating. The reality is the sweating and the nightmare were part of the same issue that's going on in your brain function. So this is like a nightmare variant. In other words, you may not have the nightmare part, but during the REM sleep, your body shoots out cortisol. You sweat as if you've just engaged in activity, and then it goes away. And that's what it is. Just like some people seem to dream more. We all dream, but yeah. Some people remember their dreams.
I had a great dream last night.
You had a great dream last night. Will you tell me that after the show?
After the program.
Not while the show is on. So I wouldn't worry about it, and I think this is related to the sleep-wake cycle that you have and cortisol levels. That's my diagnosis.
Okay, well, thanks for taking my call.
We appreciate your calling. Thank you very much. Now, before we leave for the week, Zorba, I want to share this listener tip from Dave in Clancy, Montana. This helpful hint, or perhaps I should say mini study, deals with seasonal affective disorder, which we chat about from time to time. Dave seemed to suffer from SAD and was happy to hear that light, both natural and artificial, was the way to a better mood. But he was curious as to why he still felt blue, even though he was spending a lot of time outside. Dave explains, "Then it hit me. I normally wear sunglasses a lot when I'm outside, so I've made it a point to not wear sunglasses for sunshade. A hat is okay. I've only been going sans the sunglasses for a couple of weeks, but I must say my mood has leveled and the funk has seemed to fled. I think the sunglasses prevent the hormonal responses to occur. They may trick the eyes." That was 6 weeks ago. Dave has been sending the show updates every 3 weeks and reports, "Treating SAD by getting rid of sunglasses works. It's fantastic to have the doom and gloom attitude gone and to do it without drugs. Life is good."
It's fabulous. I love the concept. I think he brings up a good point. When you go out, especially during the winter time, and you've got seasonal affective disorder, think hat, don't think shades.
Have a home remedy you want to share? We want to hear it. Send your tips to us in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Hey, stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's produced by Adam Friedrich. Aubrey Ralph did a great Brad Kohlberg impersonation today as our technical director. Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich, and our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidrum. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, expecting your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.